In 2016, Elizabeth Turner saw a need to increase access to genetic counseling. This was the inspiration for her to start Advanced Telegenetic Counseling. Now, during a pandemic, there's never been a better time to book a telehealth genetic counseling consult. Pediatric genetics is one of the many areas that ATGC specializes in, and a topic we're exploring in this episode. Their team of genetic counselors are specifically trained to help understand, interpret, and navigate complex genomic information. All genomes have a story to tell. If you're ready to learn yours, head over to at-gc.com to book your appointment with a genetic counselor today. Again, that's at-gc.com.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening or watching DNA Today. We are a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. I'm also a certified genetic counselor practicing in the prenatal space. On this show, we explore genetics' impact on our health through conversations with leaders in the field. These are experts like genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and many more thought leaders. My guests today are from Greenwood Genetics Center, Dr. Ray Louie and Kelly Walden. Ray is an assistant director in Greenwood's Molecular Diagnostic Laboratory, and Kelly is Greenwood's director of diagnostic development and a genetic counselor by training. Welcome to the show, guys. It's fantastic to have you on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
So a lot of genetic counselors, you know, if they're listening, they know Greenwood for their visual aids. I think that's what Greenwood is most popular for. But could you give us a little more background and tell us about the other division of Greenwood Genetic Center that people may be less familiar with? Kelly, did you want to start us out of just giving this background information?
Sure. So the Greenwood Genetic Center is a nonprofit organization. We do have four divisions. We have our clinical division. So they see patients across the state of South Carolina. We have our research division. They focus on functional studies, studying the causes of autism, birth defects, intellectual disability. Our education division, they provide programs across the state from middle school, high school, all the way up through our medical genetics training programs. And then our clinical labs. So Greenwood Diagnostic Labs, we have cytogenetics, molecular, and biochemical testing.
And so in this episode, we are focusing on epigenetics and really exploring like what epigenetics is and testing for epigenetic conditions. For those that may not understand, like they hear this epigenetics term, they're like, what is epigenetics? I have no idea. Ray, can you fill us in on just giving us that background information so that, you know, us talking about testing options and conditions all make a little bit more sense?
Yeah, of course. So epigenetics is the process in which expression of certain genes are either increased or decreased in a way that's independent from the coding sequence. So most of the times we think DNA is made into RNA, which is made into protein, which is true, but there are so many modifications that happen that can push it in one direction or another. So on an mRNA level, you can get modifications on the 5' and 3' end of a transcript. You can get the polyadenylation, which can stabilize the RNA and you get more expression. DNA is packed tightly into chromatin and histones, and modifications on histones or on the DNA itself can loosen up that region and increase expression, or if it's tightened up, it can decrease expression. So that's the field of epigenetics.
And so when it like loosens up, then the DNA is available to be read. It's not so tightly condensed where it can't be accessed. So it kind of increases the access. And sometimes I think of it like if genetics is like a piano, like the genome is a piano and the keys are the genes, and deciding, okay, if you hit a key, you're like playing a gene. So we all have these genetics, but seeing which genes are actually the ones that are activated or read is kind of, you know, one of the ways I think of epigenetics, because it can be sort of a abstract concept to think about, especially for people that aren't as familiar with genetics or dabbling in it. And, you know, you kind of mentioned the role of methylation with that. If we're comparing epigenetic disorders to other types of genetic disorders, what makes it different? What makes something an epigenetic disorder?
So I think most people think of genetic disorders resulting in a change in the DNA. So we can have spelling mistakes within genes, whether that's a small single nucleotide that, you know, is missing, it's changed to a different symbol. So it's our code. So there's a spelling mistake in that code. Or we can have larger deletions or duplications where there's a whole gene missing or rearrangement, but they're actually affecting that coding sequence and something's been changed. Where with epigenetics, we're not changing the coding sequence. The coding sequence is the same, but the methylation pattern, those signals that turn genes off and on, are different. So it's changing which genes may be turned off and on either across the genome or in a specific location.
And Greenwood has epigenetic testing called EpiSign, and Greenwood is the first lab to offer this type of testing. How does this work when we're talking about looking if genes are turned on or off? I mean, being able to read a gene and say, okay, there's a spelling difference. I think people can understand how that works to some extent, whereas this seems kind of like a new area. I mean, how does the testing work in terms of looking at those epigenetic changes?
Right. So Greenwood is the first lab to offer it diagnostically. Other labs in the U.S. Do perform this test, but more in a research setting. So specifically, we receive DNA, and then we do a chemical conversion with a chemical called bisulfide, which will convert cytosines to uracils. And if a cytosine is methylated, it actually protects it from that conversion. And then we use an array platform that has probes to those positions, and we can tell if something is methylated or unmethylated. And we have a collaboration with London Health Sciences, spearheaded by Dr. Beckham's Sadakovic. And we use his knowledge database. So he has a very big database of control samples and disease samples. And so when we look at all of the genes that have differentially methylated either hyper or hypomethylation and compare it in his database, he can tell us if there's a specific pattern that is unique to a specific condition. And so that's how we utilize that.
So you really take advantage of this, kind of sounds like a biobank or like a research source to say, okay, these are samples that we've identified. This sample comes from someone that has this disorder, and you can use that as your baseline of like, okay, this is what condition A would look like with the testing. And then if you have this new patient, you're comparing it to that. Is that sort of how it works?
Yeah, that's right. So we collaborated with his group, and we created many, many, many cohorts, and using his AI technology to identify the specific regions in the genome that are specifically differentially methylated in a clear pattern for those different conditions is how we do that.
And then Kelly, coming from the genetic counseling background that you have, I mean, how can EpiSign help diagnose individuals that have a suspected condition? I mean, what would be an indication for someone to know to order this testing?
Sure. So great question. So we actually offer this test in two different forms. So I'm going to approach it from sort of two different pathways. There are patients who've had a lot of other testing previously. So they may have had arrays or exome sequencing or a specific gene panel. And on one of those tests previously, they may have had a change identified. So they may have a variant of unknown clinical significance. I'm sure you talked about before how when we do testing, sometimes we find something and we don't know what it means. Whether it's never been seen before, there's just unclear information. So when we find a variant, you know, then it's hard to sort of provide additional information to the patient and to the family with what to do with that information. And so one of the things that EpiSign can be used for in the EpiSign variant sort of version of this test is for the list of conditions that are included on the test. So right now there's about 40 or so that cover maybe 60 different genes. It's a little bit hard to count because there's some overlap. Some genes have two signatures. There's groups of conditions that all have the same signature but different genes. But right now we count about 40 different conditions. But if a patient were to have a variant, so we found something in the DNA, but we don't know what it means, this is essentially like a functional test for that patient. So they can have this test, and if we see the methylation signature, that pattern that is specific for that condition, then that would be supporting evidence that, yes, maybe this variant is pathogenic. Maybe this is what's causing the patient's condition. Whereas if that signature is negative, then that would be less supportive that maybe this is just a benign change and we need to look somewhere else for that particular patient. And I think, you know, in genetics, we never say never, we never say always. There's it's hard to completely rule things out, especially where we're still learning about this technology, you know, the specificity of it and the sensitivity of it. But it's proven to be very useful for this particular group of patients who have a variant, need a functional assay, and that can be applied in a broad sense. Because a lot of times functional testing to sort of try and take a closer look can be pretty involved. So this is a way we can get at it with a diagnostic test, a clinical test that's been validated, and give this family some additional information that, yes, you found something, or no, we need to keep looking. So that's one approach. The other approach is the EpiSign Complete. So that's taking sort of the whole set of information. So those 40 conditions I mentioned, you know, covering 60 genes, and there are these methylation signatures that we're talking about that are sort of specific to conditions, but we can also pick up imprinting disorders with EpiSign. So these are conditions where there's an abnormal, you know, methylation pattern in a specific location. And these are conditions that, you know, we can test for individually, so such as Prader-Willi or Angelman, Russell Silver, Beckwith Wiedemann. They have a known imprinting disorder where the cause is methylation abnormality, and it's a specific spot in the genome. Whereas these methylation signatures are kind of a pattern across the whole genome and all genes. So we have these imprinting disorders, we have these methylation signatures. And so if you're looking at everything together, that's when we call it EpiSign Complete. And so these might be patients either who have not had any testing before. So maybe they have you know, some features that are consistent with one of the conditions or two of the conditions on the list. There's a lot of neurodevelopmental disorders, so developmental delay, intellectual disability, autism, along with some other clinical or I guess physical features, you know, that might be suspicious. But a lot of neurodevelopmental is sort of the common feature across many of these. So they may have not had any testing before and may use this as a first-tier test to sort of screen for all of these different things. Or they may have had a lot of other testing. They may have had exome sequencing and arrays and panels and single genes and still didn't have an answer. And so this is another way to look at the DNA, look for other types of changes that will not have been picked up in those other tests, and maybe provide an answer. And we have examples of that. We have examples where patients and it's been published as well in some of the papers about this testing, but patients that had exome sequencing, we didn't find anything, and then they had a positive signature on EpiSign. And we were able to either go back in some cases and find a variant in that coordinating gene. It just wasn't detected on the original test. You know, or the patient had a very clear phenotype and matched with that condition. You know, we know that all the sequencing-based tests aren't perfect yet either. So certainly able to miss things. So there's kind of both approaches, a broad approach with EpiSign Complete, for those patients with, you know, just neurodevelopmental disorders, and then a more targeted approach with the EpiSign variant for patients who have a specific change.
And it's, I think for genetic counselors, it's obvious, like, okay, of course, you know, the imprinting disorders, that's what I thought of at first when I was hearing about this, you know, new testing. But it's such an important point and so interesting that it's not just that. That if someone, you know, comes back and they have a VUS where we see that there's a change in a gene, but we're like, well, does this change mean that it makes the gene not work and you end up having a condition from that? Or is this a change where it doesn't actually affect the gene? That's just the beautiful diversity of the human race. So it's so interesting that not only is it imprinting disorders, but it really spans beyond that. It seems like just being such, you know, a newer test, that it's like kind of the next level of genetic testing when you think about it. I mean, literally like epigenetics on top of the genome, like, you know. But just so interesting that a lot of people may not think of it that way in terms of like VUSs. That opens up just to so many areas of testing that could be impacted from this, not just like pediatric conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was a question we got really commonly when we first launched this test. So we launched it in 2019, if I'm counting correctly. So we've been doing it about 2 years. And when we first launched it, there were a lot of questions about imprinting disorders and how the analysis was being done. And, you know, if we have a gene listed, does that mean we're looking at the methylation in that gene? And that's not necessarily the case. So we're looking at a pattern across the genome that has been seen in multiple patients with changes in those genes. So it is an important distinction, I think, to make when we're talking about this technology. And right now, you know, right now it's limited to this set of disorders. And we're going to be launching version 3. Hopefully soon we can talk about that more in a little bit. But I think that the big hope is that at some point we'll be able to offer it as you know, whole genome methylation analysis, similar to the way we do, you know, whole exome sequencing, or people are moving to whole genome sequencing. But we need more knowledge base before we get there.
It'd certainly be interesting that it's like, you know, we started out like single gene, and it's just gotten more so where it's like now whole genome. But, and you know, to me, I'm like, oh, okay, that's going to be like the most expansive test. You're literally reading the entire genome. But it's like, no, there's more to it, that, you know, we could get to a point where instead of ordering whole genomes, we're doing whole genome with like the epigenetic part of it for a like more complete picture. Then there'll probably be something else that's not even on my radar, but it's exciting to see just how much it's being developed and that you can really help out with cases that are like undiagnosed conditions, rare disorders. Certainly that's something we talk about a lot on the show, and, you know, all comes back to the patient at the end of the day. This is why we're all in our roles and doing what we do. How can doing the testing ultimately like help the patient? I mean, a diagnosis is great, but what does that actually mean? Does it change their care?
It depends on what the diagnosis is. So, you know, we don't like to minimize the importance of finding an answer for families, that sort of peace of mind, knowing the cause of what's going on with the patient, with themselves, with their child, is really important. But everybody wants to know, what do we do beyond that? And I think it, you know, it's going to depend on the disorder. So, if there's not a specific treatment or cure right now, then the next steps are, you know, medical management. Is there other surveillance that we need to be doing? You know, is this a condition where there's risk for tumor growth, or is there a risk of, you know, infection? So we need to be screened for something particular. So there's a lot of different things that once you have that diagnosis, you can sort of plan that surveillance and that management to try and catch any other health concerns early. It gives recurrence information. So families who may want to have more children or want to have children themselves, you know, what is their recurrence risk going to be? And also prognosis, is this something that's going to be progressive? Or if it's a very young child, you know, what do we know about this disorder in terms of development and intellectual cognitive development? How, not that that's sort of an all or nothing, but it gives guidance to families to sort of know what to expect and to anticipate.
And I think you highlighted that it's not just about, oh, we have a diagnosis, here's the treatment. There's so much else to consider when it comes to learning this information from testing, that it's, you know, that's obviously a big portion of it. Like, is there a treatment for this? You know, is there a cure for a condition? And theoretically, if we understand what's causing the disorder and we're able to turn on and off these genes, we maybe be able to treat and cure some of these epigenetic conditions. I mean, you know, Ray, I'd like to hear from you in terms of what is the current state of research in terms of treatments for disorders that we're learning that have this epigenetic component to them.
Right. So the vast majority of the work so far has been done in the cancer world. So there's lots of drugs that have been developed for different portions of these pathways. So HDAC inhibitors, histone deacetylases. There's lots of drugs against those. There's also allele-specific oligonucleotides that are targeting epigenetic changes on the RNA level, where you're trying to stabilize a transcript or turn down a transcript. Certainly, when I kind of looked in the literature a little bit when we were thinking about doing EpiSign, there wasn't that many specific treatments. But the real strength with EpiSign is that we know which genes are either hypo or hypermethylated. So we know which genes are turned up and turned down in a way that's abnormal and that's unique to that specific condition. And so if we kind of know what the key genes are, we know what we could target and stabilize with the tools that we currently have. So it's still kind of a nascent field, but that's definitely the next steps. And hopefully the cancer realm can help us generate all those pharmacological tools first.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot of research there to pull from for other disorders that, you know, we've been talking about, more genetic disorders as opposed to cancer. And Kelly kind of gave us a tease earlier of just like what is to come with some of this testing. how has the testing improved over the last couple of years? I mean, this testing is, you know, came out, you said, like 2019, so about 2 years old. I mean, what changes are on the horizon? What would be, you know, you said kind of like that next version of EpiSign. What could we look forward to seeing in that?
About 19 disorders. And then a year later, last year, we launched version two, which, as I mentioned, has now 40 disorders. And so currently we are in the process of validating for version three. So we don't know exactly how many disorders are going to be on that version, and not because we're trying to keep any secrets right now, but it's just a process of, we want to offer a test that we feel is clinically relevant and has clinical utility. And so some signatures do have more strength than others, either just by the statistical analysis or by the cohort that was available. So Ray was talking about, you know, the cohorts and how these develop. And so we have to have patients who have known changes in these genes to find these signatures. And sometimes they all have very similar changes, or there's a very few patients. So we look at being able to replicate what has been done in our lab, with the collaboration, and validate those signatures. So we're at 40 now. We're probably adding, I would say, at least 10, maybe more, with the next version. That will be coming. We're planning to launch it at ACMG. So you can definitely, it's virtual this year. We can't see each other in person, but Greenwood will have a booth, and we'll have more information there. So come check out our virtual booth. So we're adding more signatures now. And I think each version, we just learn more about the strength of different signatures, limitations of the test. It's certainly not a perfect test. It has limitations too. And we're learning about that. And we want to, you know, that's an important part, to know what we can't catch with this test as well as what we can detect.
Yeah, I think that's important for people that are ordering the test and looking at, okay, if I'm ordering this, like, what information can I get out of it? And knowing, you know, if something wasn't found, well, why is that? And what are those limitations? And, you know, understanding all the details that go into it. And epigenetics can change throughout our lives. So we've kind of been talking about it in terms of coming from a disorder perspective, but just in general, it's such an interesting field. And there's so much, you know, as we've been talking about, there is to learn. But over our lives, that methylation that we've been discussing decreases with age. And I was kind of bopping around, and I saw that there's a few companies that perform testing to calculate your biological age. Right? How accurate is this testing? Like, is this like a direct consumer where it's just in this gray zone? Is there any like truth to it?
Yeah, I guess in general, coming from a diagnostic lab, direct to consumer tests never really reached our same level of quality and specificity. We do use age-related methylation changes as a part of our quality control metrics. So if we receive a sample, is that just from a five-year-old? Does our data show that? Yes. That's kind of how we use it. And we know that methylation changes throughout your development. So in utero, in your neonatal period, and all of that. So I can't really comment on the direct to consumer side, but we have seen some samples that match really well with the age, and some samples kind of deviate a little bit from the age. And the significance of that, to me, is very unclear. And so I don't think you can really say, oh, if I have like a younger methylation age, it makes me healthier or something like that. I think that's kind of the wrong conclusion. It's just a little piece of data, and what it means is right now it's unclear.
Yeah. So it sounds like it can serve as a guide, but people that are looking at ordering this testing to figure out their biological age, sounds like we'll give them a little bit of a warning on that, that might not be as accurate as, you know, people may be thinking it is. But maybe that will change in the future, kind of as right. The field expands.
Yeah, it definitely might. And we should emphasize that most of the data is performed on blood. So all of the biobanks, all of those samples are from blood. So really you're just looking at that one tissue. And so if someone is ordering a direct-to-consumer test and they get this one result, it doesn't mean that one result is reflected in all of your other tissues.
Yeah, that's a really good point of like again, think of like limitations of testing. Okay, what are you actually testing? What is that sample from, and what does that represent? So for people that are now hearing, okay, Greenwood is the only one that's offering this as a diagnostic test. They're saying, this is something that I really should put on my radar, talk about with my colleagues. This maybe is something that we should start ordering for patients of theirs. What is the best way for providers to learn more about EpiSign or even get into ordering it for patients?
We have a lot of information on our website, so ggc.org/EpiSign. You can learn about both types of tests. All our requisitions are online, as well as finding contact information for our lab genetic counselors and directors.
Great. And we will include that in the show notes for today's episode, which is going to be available at dnapodcast.com. If you're interested in connecting with us and Greenwood on social media, you can search DNA Today on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. This episode is on YouTube, the video part of it. Another reason to head over to our social media is to enter our giveaway. Win a pair of Bluetooth noise-canceling headphones from Greenwood. The specific links to all the posts where you can enter on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn is going to be in the show notes to this episode. If you're listening to it in a podcast player, it's also going to be available at dnapodcast.com. So be sure to enter the giveaway. It ends on April 11th, 2021. And any questions you have for me, Kelly Ray, about epigenetics, EpiSign, feel free to email info@dnapodcast.com. And we would really appreciate if you could leave a rating and review on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps other people, other nerds, find the podcast like yourself. So thank you so much, Ray and Kelly, for coming on. I think this is so interesting to hear just like what all this new testing is and just how it can impact. And I think what's staying with me is just like, it's not for people that necessarily have like an imprinting disorder. It's even more than that, which I think, you know, something that I definitely learned today. So thank you so much both for coming on the show and just sharing all of your expertise in epigenetics. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks again for having us. This was fun.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it.
Ray and Kelly showcased how complex pediatric genetics can be, so it's understandable that people are often confused about the role genetics plays in health conditions. That's where genetic counselors come in. We are trained healthcare providers in genetics to explain these concepts and help you navigate testing. The genetic counselors over at Advanced Telegenetic Counseling specialize in areas of genetics like pediatrics. Their team is skilled in genetic disorders that affect children, including the conditions we talked about in today's episode, like Angelman, Prader-Willi, Beckwith-Wiedemann, and many other conditions. Genetic counselors at ATGC can help you understand these genetic disorders, the chance to have another child with the condition, genetic testing options, and more. So if you find yourself having questions about your own genetics, your child's genetics, or want to know more about adding the expertise of ATGC's certified genetic counselors to help support your own practice, reach out to the team. Go to their website, at-gc.com. Again, that's at-gc.com. You can also hear from the founder, Elizabeth Turner, a couple episodes ago, number 143 on DNA Today, where she shares about telehealth and more of what ATGC has to offer. Thanks for listening and watching. Join us next time to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.